Hello, everyone. We're back from our summer hiatus.
Yay!
It was a great summer for us in my household. I know about you guys. You know, if you did anything fun or got to go anywhere. But one thing that we definitely got to do, or at least I did, was have some time to read. And as you know, we had a bit of a challenge that Kofi left us with at the beginning of the summer that Laura and I gladly accepted. And so we'll talk about the status of that. But first of all, folks, we are coming at you in audio and in video this year. So you'll be able to gaze upon our countenances as we talk about books and other ish. So, how was your summer, guys? What'd you guys do? How'd it go?
My summer was good. I did a lot of reading and writing and writing and reading. I didn't really go too many places because this Delta virus thing started happening. So we thought we were going to go on vacation, but no, the highlight was getting my daughter vaccinated and my son vaccinated. So that was my summer. Laura?
Well, we did take a couple of trips with like close family, and we went to the beach for a week, and we went to Deep Creek. So we went to the mountain and the lake. So that was really nice. We spent a lot of time just in the house cooking and eating and watching TV and, you know, and also outside just going to the beach in the water. Cool. So that was really nice to be able to, you know, get away. Yeah. And somewhere in there, I did some reading.
So as a reminder, the challenge for the summer was for each of us to read a book outside of our usual tastes and perhaps comfort zones. And so, Kofi, you read Jodi Picoult, right?
Yeah, Mercy. Yeah, I got like 50, 55 pages in, and I started having these epiphanies that maybe, just maybe, this isn't for me as a reader. And I think that's healthy. I think that sometimes, you know, our tendency, especially if we've come out of literature programs or just academics in general, that we must finish and must like all books. I don't dislike the book. I just found that as I was reading it, the storyline, the ideals behind it were not as captivating for me. They just didn't hold me. It's about love, of course, but it's also about the limits that love can have in terms of, you know, assisting killing, or if you will, one of the characters kills his wife out of love or mercy because she was dying. And now he's back home in his hometown, or he's a relative of the sheriff of this town. And now they're sort of figuring out what to do, that this guy brings himself and his dead wife to their town. It's interesting, but it just didn't hold me as much as other books were holding me. And so I decided to let Jodi go. But I do like her phrasing. I do like her sentences. I do like her writing, but it just, as a story, it just didn't hold me.
So Kofi, I'm curious, what do you think did it? Like, what about it failed to hold your attention, maybe?
Well, I think it just didn't feel like a story I could relate to on one level. But I also like stories and that have bigger themes, bigger ideas, things that are not so individualized, but a little more universalized in a way, and that it affects more than just one small community, but it affects a larger dynamic of communities. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I don't know where Mercy falls within the Coles, you know, writing history, but it felt a little more melodramatic than I would have liked. And I just read a book that was kind of melodramatic, and I didn't really expect to read another one. So I got through one, and I didn't want to go through another one. So I got maybe about a third of the way in or a quarter of the way in, and I just tapped out. So my own challenge, I did not succeed.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on your definition of success. You tried it, you gave it a shot, and, you know, I think it's healthy for us to, you know, like you said before, maybe sometimes you just don't get through a book, and for whatever reason, and I think that's okay. How about you, Laura? How did yours?
It was definitely a summer of fails in terms of reading. I think I had mentioned in our last episode about summer readings, three different books, and I have failed to finish all three of them. So the big one was the Stephanie Meyer book called The Host. And I have to say, I actually enjoy that kind of premise, sort of post-apocalyptic, you know, situation or, you know, and I like that kind of plot, but it was the writing for me. It could not hold my attention. And it's a long book, but I got in maybe 50 pages, which didn't take me too far, right? Because it's a long book. And what I found was it then interfered with my ability to read, period, because I kept trying to read this book, you know, and I didn't want to abandon it, but I couldn't read it. So I would take it to the pool. Like every day I'd read a paragraph and then put it away and just watch my kids play in the pool. So it became like a barrier to reading because I was trying so hard to try to read this book that didn't, as Kofi said, hold my attention. So I couldn't do it. And then the other two books, I think, was They Both Die at the End. Also very interesting premise. I'm not exactly sure what happened. It just lost interest. I thought it was a, you know, good plot and the characters were interesting.
Title gave away the ending.
Yeah, maybe two. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I already know how what happens. And then the third book was, I was going to read the second book of the trilogy by Steph Cha, which is like supposed to be like a thriller mystery. And I realized that in reading the second book, which I did not finish, is that I must have given that first book a lot of benefit of doubt, or, you know, that being her first thriller mystery, you know, as a writer, because I read her other novel, which was fantastic, called Your House Will Pay. And this was a different genre. And so maybe I was much more forgiving with that first book. And then it's sort of like in the second book, it just wasn't enough for me to keep going with the second book. So I failed. But I do want to talk about later, though, and I would love to hear also from Sylvia, too, about the Sealy Challenge in August, because I did end up reading a few books of poetry.
Let's make it a 3 for 3. I failed as well. It's just a podcast of failure here. So I failed for a different reason, though. So I don't know what the fail is, where to pinpoint the fail, but I started reading. So my book that I was supposed to read was Crazy Rich Asians, to give that sort of like popular fiction, you know, a try. I got like maybe a couple pages in. I was like, why does this seem so familiar? Is it because I watched the movie or like, you know what? And then I realized I read this before. Like a couple years ago on an airplane, because I had forgotten my actual book. And so like, I just kind of grabbed whatever was there. I was like, oh, Crazy Rich Asians. Okay. So I think where I went, I think it was California, I think I left the book there. I was like, it's just out of my mind. And I didn't feel compelled to read it again. So partly because the prose, you know, it was not that compelling, I guess, the sentences and the language just wasn't that compelling. And also like, I think reading the first part, like the second time around, I just was struck with, like, I think I was reaching unnecessarily. Like as a reader, I was reaching more than I normally would to try and find meaning, like deeper meaning, but I just couldn't find that meaning because I felt like a lot of the characters, even though they have like real struggles and issues with love and life and everything and being in this circle and the pressures of it, I don't know, it was just kind of vapid. And where I am now, like post, maybe it's the pandemic, maybe whatever, just looking at things differently with a different lens, I think it just felt very shallow. And like, you know, like there are real problems out there. This is not one of them. So I stopped reading it.
I'm glad you mentioned in terms of, you know, the conditions we find ourselves in now. I wonder if I read a more recent Jodi Picoult book, that might spark something more. And maybe I was, you know, the time period, you know, because there was a time period in this country where euthanasia and assisted suicides was an issue, was a topic. And it felt like this book was speaking to that particular time, but it's also speaking to a particular culture that I'm just not a part of. And that's weird because I've read books by other cultures that I'm not a part of, but I could see some level of connection. Mm-hmm. With this, I felt like, maybe it just didn't grab me. It felt like it was talking about a community that was so far removed from anything I was interested in that I just couldn't grasp hold of it. And again, some of the scenes and some of the writing is really, really good. I mean, this is no shot or shade on her writing. It's just maybe I picked one of the books that didn't really do it for me. You know, she's written like a billion. So I'm sure that one of them is going to be good, you know, so.
I do think that, you know, we are beings that exist in our time, right? And so like, what is that? We teach it sometimes too, the idea of kairos, right? And the timing of things. And so I think that does shift and change as a reader. That's why you look back at some books and you're like, whoa, that did not age well, you know?
Right. That's true.
Yeah. Or some books that have, you know, like stayed constant throughout history, you know, as something we come back to over again, it still feels very real. It still feels very relevant, you know, for one reason or another. So I definitely think that there is something to that. Yeah. Okay. So we failed.
But we learn through our failure, and I think that's the big part, you know. And I guess promoting the idea that it's okay if you don't finish a book, you know, maybe that's not the book for you, and that's okay. It's like, as a colleague of ours, Renee, said, sometimes it's like wine. You get a sip of wine, you go, I want to keep drinking this. And then you get a sip and you go, I don't want this. That's sometimes how a book can go.
Right. And better to put it down than suffer for a really bad headache, for example.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. But this was probably a rare occasion where I didn't finish so many books. I usually try to power through, even if it's by skipping a little bit, right? I just need to be able to say that I finished it. But I realized that, again, like that idea of like this, my commitment to finishing this book that I wasn't enjoying was holding me back in terms of other readings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some of the other books that you did end up gravitating towards? Kofi, you said you were reading something else that was captivating you more. So what was that?
Yeah. Marlon James's Red Wolf, Red Leopard, Black Wolf. I'm sorry. It's colors. I'm not good at that. But it's sort of like this hero's journey, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it's set in Africa, probably West Africa, but it's mythologizing parts of it. It's fantastical in other parts of it. It's just really interesting. And it was sort of aligning with a project that I was working on. And so it felt right to read that. And, you know, there was The Other Black Girl, and I felt right. And Keith Lehman's, I have his book right here, Long Division, you know, I started getting into that, and I like the structure of it. And I think one of the things that I'm sort of falling in love with is this play of form and things not being so linear. I like the stories that kind of vacillate within time and cause you to really be in the moment and wonder where they are in a positive way, not in a like, did this writer lose focus way? But, you know, you're going through this journey with the characters and you're learning about them, you're feeling what they're feeling. And again, you know, it's no shade to Jodi Picoult. She's terrific. It's just with that book, I didn't feel the same way. And Marlon James's book is almost 600 pages. And I was very much interested in reading that more so. What about you, Laura?
I was waiting to see if you remember my name.
Well, I was about to say Sylvia, but Sylvia asked me the question, so I didn't want to go back. It's like we're playing tennis, and I didn't want to.
Then I would have felt left out. No, actually, you know, I did read, and I had to read, and I did enjoy very much Bell Hooks' books. And Sylvia, Kofi, and I, the three of us, are in this faculty learning community this year on Bell Hooks at HCC. And in kind of preparation for that, I read her book on class. It's called Class Matters. And the other book is her memoir called Ain't I a Woman? Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I mean, Ain't I a Woman is a classic, right? Especially if you're thinking of any sort of feminist thinking or theory in any field, that's a book that most people would have read or have, you know, heard references to. But I think Class Matters is probably a little less, I don't know, like highlighted. And it was fantastic. She just presented this, the intersection of class, race, and gender, especially in the context of education, in such a clear way for me that I have not heard other people put it that way. And again, in her, you know, style of writing, it is very personal. She talks about her own background. So that was a really good book for me to like dive into this summer. So I did that. I read those two books, which were great. And then I read some poetry in August. Sylvia last year introduced me to the Seely Challenge, where you read one book of poetry a day in the month of August. And I think, who's the poet? Is it Nicole Seely?
Nicole Seely, yeah.
Yeah, who started this. So yes, I failed in that I didn't read 30 books in August of poetry, but it did get me to read like cover to cover several poets whose books I have, and I didn't, you know, fully read like cover to cover. So I focused on some of our local poets I've heard in person or I've met personally. So people like Alan King, Joseph Ross, Stephen Leyva, Derek Weston Brown, Ethelbert Miller, and Laura Chauvin. So some of these folks that I have met and just really love their poetry, I really got to like dive deeper into their poetry. So mm-hmm. I like the Seely Challenge. And even if you don't like complete it, it definitely gets you to read, right? At least.
That's actually the true purpose of the Seely mm-hmm. Challenge, is not so much to read a book a day, although that was like the original, that was her like original yeah. challenge that she issued. But, you know, I think she wrote at the end, like, whether you read one book or 30 books, you know, the whole purpose is to not just to spend that time to read poetry, but also make, I think the beauty of the Seely Challenge is the community that it creates. So like, people are sharing out, you know, like you just did, the poets and the poetry that they're reading. And that makes poetry more visible in the world, which I think it doesn't really get that kind of like traction, you know, mm-hmm. compared to like fiction or even nonfiction. So yeah, no, that was great. I didn't even try this year for the 31 books. I knew that it was going to be a tough month. So I think I committed to like two to three books a week. And I ended up reading like maybe one book a week. But it was still very meaningful. And each year like that I've been doing it, well, 2 years, there's been like an unofficial theme that has emerged, you know, so like whether you're intentionally reading like local poets or poets of color or, you know, LGBTQ community, it's a different theme that emerges for me every year. And I kind of like leave it up to poetic fate to decide for me, like what it's going to be. And this year I felt like the emerging themes were about like genealogy, interestingly, mm-hmm. and identity. So, and then also like, interestingly, like with a thread of like capitalism, like in there. So like I read some poets and poetry that kind of linked the idea of like relational like dynamics to private property. Taylor Johnson, for example, who is I believe a transgender poet, like talks about this idea of like, there's this one poem that really stuck with me about like, you know, like any American, I have an addiction to private property. And it's like this, it's a weird way to think about like who you belong to and who belongs to you, and that we phrase our relationships that way a lot of times. He's mine, my, you know. Mm-hmm, and it's always a good thing, right? Like usually a good thing, but this idea of like.
Right, because we do talk about like community in the sense of belonging, and we use that in a very positive way. Yeah, yeah. But you're right, that's very interesting.
Yeah, and I don't think this poet, I don't think they were meaning to, maybe I was reading too much into it, but that's nonetheless what I walked away with, and it was really interesting. Even my art, you know, the art that we produce and we create, you know, what are we creative for? And a lot of times we are sucked into this like capitalist, you know, whatever, like machinery of, right. of that. So at what point is my art mine? And is it my property? Who does that belong to? I don't know. It raised a lot of deeper, larger questions for me.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that I like about literature with the big L, is that it asks bigger questions that are not just individual in application or impact. And I think that sometimes, you know, commercial fiction, really is trying to get to a specific audience to feel a specific emotion or even think about a specific idea. Whereas, you know, what you were just describing, Sylvia, seems like it's, you know, it can go and branch off in various directions and it calls to question other things, you know. And I think that that's why certain melodramatic books for me don't work for me. But at the same time, which is kind of weird, sci-fi and thrillers and mysteries kind of do, you know, and they are very much formulaic. But there's something about their formula and there's something about how they're telling that story. Spencer for Hire is doing the same exact thing in every book, you know, but there's something about that dynamic. Or Sue Crofton, I think her name was, with the alphabets. You know, there's something unique about that, that for whatever reason, I just can't put down. But with melodramatic books, it's like, oh, not another happy ending.
Yeah. I mean, it probably has something to do with like the function of a particular genre in your life. Like you read certain kind of something, you know, a book to serve a certain purpose. And then also the expectation you go into a book or a genre knowing or expecting it to do X, Y, and Z. And sometimes that's why you go into it, because you know it's going to do X, Y, and Z. And there's kind of a comfort in going back to that genre. And I think that's why like fans of mysteries, for example, are fans of mysteries. Yeah. And maybe that's what sort of happened with Steph Chath's books. Like, I don't regularly read mysteries or thrillers. So maybe it was a genre issue. Yeah. For me. Yeah.
Speaking of mysteries and thrillers, we've got some authors lined up for this season. And in what month are we in?
We're in September now.
It's officially fall. Right. And so we wanted to share with our listeners or viewers our next book pick for October, called An Unkindness of Ghosts by Rivers Solomon. And it is a speculative fiction, right? Or / sci-fi, right? So I think the comparisons, I've never read anything by this author before, but I think the comparisons are to like Octavia Butler and some of these other kind of Colson Whitehead, I think is on the description on the back cover. Two authors who I enjoy extremely. And so just in time for our spooky month of Halloween.
The setting of the novel takes place in a space vessel. And there are these like different decks on the spaceship that where different types of people have to live. And I started reading it just a few pages last night. I couldn't help it. One of the really interesting things that you can look forward to, readers, is the writer. They are really showing us how to use the pronoun they. It's prominent in the novel. And this whole discussion about like, oh, it's too hard to say they, and, you know, it, people who insist on the, you know, she and he. And I think they do it really beautifully, at least in the first few pages that I read. And it's so interesting to see that pronoun they being used for a character in a very prominent way. And it was a treat for me to come across that when I opened the pages. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually really excited about that.
Yeah.
Which I read about, and I read some of the reviews earlier. But the idea that, like, especially in sci-fi, I mean, it's not unusual to find sci-fi works where there are no genders.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ursula K. Le Guin, I can't remember the name off the top of my head of the book. I think it's a series of books. And you're introduced to like a planet full of like genderless beings.
That's right. Yeah.
And so I'm really excited to that. And that's where I kind of, speaking of like form of genres, like that's why I really like sci-fi and speculative and other types of fiction, because it bends I can suspend my like anything, rules. Mm-hmm. And you kind of are invited to do that. And I think there's so much freedom in that. I'm excited.
Yep.
And I am too.
Yeah. And I hope our listeners and our readers will pick up the book and read along with us, because that will be our next topic of conversation. We'd love to hear from you.
Indeed, indeed.
Anything else for the good of the order for us?
No, I'm really looking forward to the discussion. The book sounds so interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to a whole year of recording with you guys.
Yes. You guys get to see me and I get to read maybe some of your writing about seeing us. I don't know. or maybe your disagreement with Jodi Picoult. And Mercy was a great book. You need to reread it.
That would be great too.
That would be.
Welcome all comments. All right, everyone. Well, thank you,
everybody,
for tuning in, and we'll see you next month.
See you next month.
Bye bye.
Happy reading.
Happy reading.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.